ਤੁਸੀਂ ਹੋ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ।
ਹਾਲ ਹੀ ਵਿੱਚ ਨਾਗਰਿਕਤਾ ਅਤੇ ਬਹੁ ਸੱਭਿਆਚਾਰ ਵਿਭਾਗ ਲਈ ਸਹਾਇਕ ਮੰਤਰੀ ਦਾ ਪਦ ਹਾਸਲ ਕਰਨ ਵਾਲੇ ਜੂਲੀਅਨ ਹਿੱਲ ਨੇ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਨਾਲ ਖਾਸ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਕੀਤੀ। ਇਸ ਦੌਰਾਨ ਉਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਨੇ ਪ੍ਰਵਾਸੀਆਂ ਲਈ ਆਉਣ ਵਾਲੀਆਂ ਸਰਕਾਰ ਦੀਆਂ ਯੋਜਨਾਵਾਂ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਨਾਲ ਕਈ ਚਲੰਤ ਮੁੱਦਿਆਂ ਬਾਰੇ ਵੀ ਚਰਚਾ ਕੀਤੀ ਹੈ। ਇਸ ਇੰਟਰਵਿਊ ਦੌਰਾਨ ਉਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਨੇ ਲਿਟਲ ਇੰਡੀਆ ਵਿੱਚ ਹੋਣ ਵਾਲੇ ਮੁੜ ਵਿਕਾਸ, ਪੇਰੈਂਟ ਵੀਜ਼ਿਆਂ ਲਈ ਲੰਬੀ ਉਡੀਕ ਅਤੇ ਭਾਰਤੀ ਮੂਲ ਦੇ ਆਦਮੀ ਦੀ ਵਿਕਟੋਰੀਆ ਦੇ ਡੈਂਡੀਨੋਂਗ ਖੇਤਰ ਵਿੱਚ ਆਪਣੇ ਆਪ ਨੂੰ ਸਾੜ ਕੇ ਖੁਦਕੁਸ਼ੀ ਕਰਨ ਵਰਗੇ ਕਈ ਚਲੰਤ ਮੁੱਦਿਆਂ ਤੇ ਵੀ ਚਰਚਾ ਕੀਤੀ ਹੈ। ਆਓ ਫਿਰ ਸੁਣਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਜੂਲੀਅਨ ਹਿੱਲ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਦੀ ਸ਼ਾਇਨਾ ਕਾਲਰਾ ਦੀ ਇਹ ਖਾਸ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ। Welcome to SBS.
Thanks. It's terrific to be with you.
We are also looking forward to your great insights. So you've taken this position at a very tumultuous time when there are global conflicts that are affecting Australia, and then there's a rising sentiment against migrants or anything that's different here. Migrants are being blamed, for example, for a lot of things, including employment, including housing. So in such a scenario, how do you plan to develop social cohesion?
Thanks for the question. It is good to be with you. And SBS should be very proud of the fact that you are the world's most diverse broadcaster, talking to Australians in 60 languages, and now the most trusted Australian news service, which is a real credit to everyone. Look, Australian multicultural society is a miracle in global terms. We've always been a multicultural continent. First Nations Australians spoke more than 250 different languages. We then layered on our democratic systems of government from European settlement. But now modern multicultural Australia, it has one of the most diverse populations in the world. Social cohesion is not an end state. It's a process. It's something that we need to continue to work on. And when we work on it, then it works. And that's a shared responsibility of governments, of faith leaders, but also of community leaders in the broader community. It's an issue right across the world at the moment, some of it fueled, I suspect, by social media, by economic pressures, that social cohesion is under stress and particularly exacerbated by global conflicts on many continents. What happens in the world outside Australia does impact daily life in Australia because our communities are so connected to other parts of the world. The government doesn't take our social cohesion for granted. As the Prime Minister has said, since he became Prime Minister, our focus is on trying to bring Australians together, not divide them. And the impact of political leadership, of the words that political leaders and the tone that political leaders use, really matters. And, you know, I'll try not to be overly partisan or political, but we have been very critical. I have for many years of Peter Dutton as the leader of the opposition, one of the most divisive politicians that the country's ever seen, who has a pattern over many years of trying to divide the country on these issues, whether it was, you know, African gangs in Melbourne, saying that he's never apologised for saying that Lebanese Australians should never have come here in the 1970s, the Racial Discrimination Act changes they were trying to water down, a university-level English language test to become an Australian citizen he tried when he was in government, a standard that many Australians would never meet, and then his more recent comments. So we invest in social cohesion. We're providing grants and support, particularly to combat horrible levels of anti-Semitism, division, and projection on the Muslim community. But I really stress that critical role of leadership at all levels of the country. We need to remember that words and tone matter.
You represent Bruce electoral, which includes Dandenong. And as we speak, there are protests going on there by asylum seekers. And one of the people from Indian community was part of this protest and they have immolated themselves. So what is the government doing to help these people who are the most vulnerable?
I'll make two comments on that. Firstly, just on that absolutely horrific case, which is I've become aware of over the last 24 hours. I think any Australian, indeed any human, would be horrified when a person gets to the point with their own mental health and life that that seems like an option. That's just horrific. And my deepest sympathies to the man's family and friends. I can't comment on the individual case because I've spoken with the department and they're still gathering details. I've learnt not always to rely on everything that's first reported on social media and the media, and we'll be briefed as soon as the department's gathered more information. More broadly, I'd make a couple of points, and I do represent one of the most multicultural communities in the country here in southeast Melbourne. When the government came to office just over 2 years ago, we inherited a shocking mess in the Department of Home Affairs, more than 1 million visa and citizenship applications backlogged, and large numbers of Australians that were stuck as permanently temporary migrants. You know, we have fulfilled the promise that we made where I think over 18,000 of the 19,000 Australians who'd been stuck on temporary protection visas or SHEV visas have now received a permanent visa, and that's a good thing. Thousands more, the former Minister Andrew Giles, when they've been legally able to, have been able to apply for a humanitarian visa. They've been stuck on bridging visas. So I can't comment on individual cases, but just make the point that there are many people in Australia on bridging visas, but each case is different.
Australia's visa processing are considered to be delayed, one of the most delayed across the globe. And it's a persistent problem with the migrants that parent visa, currently it has an average wait time of around 31 years. And now we have seen a lot of changes in the student visas happening one after the other. In such scenarios, what is the image that we are portraying to the world?
Yeah, it's an issue which I've spoken about extensively in the Parliament from an opposition and since being in government, and it's complicated. I know often we search for simple answers to these questions, but the truth is it's not simple. The government has, as I said, massively reduced the backlog of visas that we inherited. We've cleaned out the horrible backlog in partner visas that were waiting more than 5 years. We've cleared those out. They were families who were separated, but in many cases people who hadn't met their own children. We've reduced the backlog of citizenship applications, and we've reduced the waiting times and cleared out the backlog on visitor visas and so on. The two categories that you mentioned, though, and I'll address them directly, on the student visa question, the reality is there will always be more people who seek to come to Australia to study than can ever be accommodated. That's just a fact. Everyone knows that. And there are, as independent reports have shown, most international students are terrific, and we should be really proud of the contribution they make to our country in every sense. Most international education providers are great, and they do good quality education. But there are some who seek to misuse the student visa system, whether for workplace, they're selling a work visa, not a student visa, they're exploited, or it's just a scam to get into Australia. That's just a fact. Everyone knows that. And so we make no apology as a government for tightening the integrity of the student visa system. That does mean that more visas have been rejected, but we have to restore integrity and sustainability to the international education sector if it's to retain its social licence in Australia. The second point you make about parent visas, I know firsthand, particularly in certain cultures, South Asian culture, India is probably a leading example, of the role that grandparents play in the upbringing of grandchildren. Now, of course, I've got Indian friends and see this, and it's a lovely thing. It's true in other cultures. I was at dinner a couple of weeks ago with an old friend of mine, whose mum finally has moved over from Shanghai, and it's just lovely to see the bond between the grandkids. There's also a reality, which people would appreciate, that not every person who seeks to bring their parent on a permanent visa is ever going to be able to do that. That shouldn't be a controversial statement. Every government has annual limits to the number of parent visas that can be granted because of the cost to the taxpayer. When people come late in life not having paid taxes and worked in a country, doesn't have to be Australia, it could be any country, and they run up age pension costs, aged care, health system costs. Most of the health costs for a person happen in the first year or so of life and then the later stage of life. It simply doesn't add up. as a country. You can't have a million aged parents all arriving at once. And so the dilemma for any government is how do you strike that balance? Labor did increase the number of parent visas granted, but the demand remains enormous. And so that's why options like longer stay parent visas to allow grandparents to come and spend extended periods, often after the birth of a child, remain involved in the family while not migrating permanently, also need to be part of that mix.
Australia also has a huge aging population. Isn't this a time where younger migrants probably can be looked at to support the economy, but at the same time we are capping the number of students coming in? How do we strike this balance?
It's a fantastic question, isn't it, compared to the previous question. On one hand, there's understandable community demand for parent migration, which would exacerbate the aging of the population. On the other hand, there's also a need for highly skilled, talented migration to fill skill shortages in the economy and also to moderate the ageing of the population. So it is a balance. I've always said that there's often too much community or media or political focus on the number without enough focus on the composition and the quality of a migration program. And that's been one of the government's real criticisms of Peter Dutton and Scott Morrison's time as immigration ministers, that there was far too much silly politics and chest beating and being tough in public, but no real policy work done on what, how do you maximise the value for Australia out of a migration program and making sure that you've got enforcement and integrity so that the program's not misused. So those two things have been the real focus of the government, clearing the backlogs and improving the integrity and stopping the criminal misuse of our visa program, and also rethinking the policy basis for migration to make sure we get the most value for Australia out of the program. So if you look at the recalibrated program at the moment, there is a need, given demand pressures in the economy. We're reducing the overall net migration limit. We're cutting it roughly in half. That's the commitment, and that's on track this year. There was a big rebound post-COVID and there was labour market shortages, so people stayed in the country a bit longer and they're now leaving. So that'll return to normal kind of levels. But we need to continue to maintain, as we are in the program, a focus on highly skilled, educated migrants who'll make a wonderful contribution to the country over time.
When we talk about skilled migration, there is, though people who come on a skilled visa, there's no law binding them to work in the fields that they have been selected for. So how do we make sure that the skill gaps are filled in such a scenario?
So we're drifting a little bit outside my areas of focus and responsibility, because within the Home Affairs portfolio, Tony Burke is the senior minister. My focus is on citizenship, multicultural affairs and support for multicultural communities, but also on that settlement side of things, English language and so on. But I'll give you a couple of general comments. There's many different parts to the current skilled migration program, and the migration review, which I referred to, proposes improvements and reforms to the current settings. There's general skilled migration, which is really about human capital, about getting people who have talent, ability, the right education to fill skills gaps. But you're right, of course, we don't run a bonded labour system where someone is bonded to a particular job when they come as a permanent migrant. But the employment outcomes for permanent skilled migrants are very strong. There's also the employer-sponsored program, though, where employers can sponsor an individual with the skills need and they do stay in that job for a period of time. But look, overall, I think the evidence is clear. If you bring in the right people with the integrity checks, with the right education, then the majority of those people do work in the fields that they want to work in and that you want them to work in. But of course, all of us develop our careers and can go in unexpected directions. Some people behind microphones, other people getting elected to parliaments, and you know, every kind of possible career journey that you can imagine in Australia.
So Multicultural Framework Review has recommended that citizenship tests should be taken in languages other than English. So what is the government's stance on that? Would you be accepting that recommendation?
In short, no. That has been a very clear position. Australian law is that the citizenship test to become an Australian must be taken in what they call basic English. So it's not university-level English, and we've been very critical of Peter Dutton in the former government trying to introduce a university-level English language test to become an Australian citizen, a test that many Australians wouldn't pass. It's blatant snobbery. It's not something the government supports. But there are no changes, and we will not be changing the requirement for the test to be undertaken in basic English. We've expanded the range of support for the Adult Migrant English Program. That's a demand-driven program that allows people new to Australia, and including people who might have been here for a while but not had the opportunity, to get their level up to vocational English to really succeed in the workplace, and that's a good thing. It's terrific that our country is multilingual. We want to encourage that. We want to value it. It's important that people can pass on that culture and language to their kids, but also that we can take advantage of being a multilingual country. But English is our common language. In a highly skilled modern economy, people need good English to be able to succeed and fulfil their human and economic potential in our country. Just finally, on the citizenship test, of course, there are exemptions for people under a certain age and for people over 60. There are exemptions for incapacity. There's support available for the test, and the department continues to keep the test under review. There's been numerous changes since 2007 to make sure that it is fair for people whilst being provided in basic English. I have spoken with some of the review panel about that recommendation. I think there's also been, at least from talking to them, perhaps a little bit of some misunderstanding that it wasn't necessarily a suggestion that the test itself had to move away from English, but that there might be more resources and support provided in other languages. So, you know, some of those other aspects, of course, we want to make sure that there's good information out in other languages, but the test itself needs to be in basic English. The very final thing I'd say is a compliment to SBS. Some of the best material on what life's like in Australia and on settling in Australia is actually the SBS-produced material available in numerous languages from your website, which I now refer people to, so plug for you.
Thank you so much. Coming back to your precinct, so Dandenong is also home to Little India. But amid plans of redevelopment, there is a sense of fear among people that their livelihood might be taken away. So how will you ensure that with redevelopment plans, the identity of Little India still remains?
I love Little India. It's just a block or two from my office here, and we often go and get lunch there. I won't give a plug to the individual businesses, but of course everyone has their favourite curry houses down there. The strict answer to your question, not meaning to avoid it, is that the planning in Australia, just for your listeners, under the Australian Constitution, the federal government doesn't have power over land, over property, redevelopment issues, building issues. They're all actually the responsibility of state governments under the Australian Constitution. So redevelopment of the central area of Dandenong, it's where my office is, I live just nearby. Redevelopment ultimately is a matter controlled by the state government under the Constitution. That said, I have a great interest as a local in the continued rebuilding of Dandenong, continued development of new jobs and facilities, and I know the state government are well aware of the importance of protecting the Little India precinct as any redevelopment occurs.
Okay, and last question. In this age of misinformation and divided political views, how important is role of a public broadcaster like SBS?
Critically important. It's an enormous compliment to SBS that you are Australia's most trusted news service. I'll say that again so it sinks in. SBS, as our multicultural broadcaster in 60 languages, is also Australia's most trusted news service. And that's a credit to the work that you do, that you've built that trust with communities. I think most Australians understand, if you look consistently at the research, that SBS and the ABC, acting independently of politicians, independently of governments of the day, under their charters, have a critical role in broadcasting and telling stories of Australia of Australians to Australians, but also about Australia to a global audience, independently of politics and politicians. So I'm a big supporter of public broadcasting and of community broadcasting, because it fills that critical need in our democratic society to tell those stories and ensure, in the case of SBS, that the diversity of Australia's story is reflected, and that all Australians, no matter their cultural background, see themselves reflected in our national life and can access information in other languages about Australia.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate your insights.
Thanks so much. Lovely to chat, Shina. You have a lovely day.
ਇਹ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਤੁਹਾਨੂੰ ਕਿੱਦਾਂ ਦੀ ਲੱਗੀ? ਤੁਹਾਡੇ ਇਸ ਬਾਰੇ ਕੀ ਵਿਚਾਰ ਨੇ? ਤੇ ਸਿਆਸੀ ਆਗੂਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਕੀ ਸਵਾਲ ਪੁੱਛਣਾ ਚਾਹੁੰਦੇ ਹੋ ਜਾਂ ਕਿਹੜੀ ਚਰਚਾਵਾਂ ਤੁਸੀਂ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਰਾਹੀਂ ਸੁਣਨਾ ਚਾਹੁੰਦੇ ਹੋ? ਸਾਨੂੰ ਕਮੈਂਟਾਂ ਤੇ ਮੈਸੇਜਾਂ ਰਾਹੀਂ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਦੱਸੋ। ਕਮੈਂਟ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਸਾਡੇ ਸੋਸ਼ਲ ਮੀਡੀਆ ਹੈਂਡਲਸ ਤੇ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਕਰ ਸਕਦੇ ਹੋ ਜੀ, ਤੇ SMS ਕਰਨ ਲਈ ਸਾਡਾ ਨੰਬਰ ਹੈ 0439799767, ਜਾਨੀ ਕਿ 0439799767। ਤੁਸੀਂ ਸੁਣ ਰਹੇ ਹੋ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਤੇ ਮੈਂ ਹਾਂ ਸ਼ਾਇਨਾ ਕਾਲਰਾ।
ਫੇਸਬੁੱਕ ਉਤੇ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਨੂੰ ਲਾਈਕ ਕਰੋ, ਸਾਂਝਾ ਕਰੋ ਅਤੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਵਿਚਾਰ ਵੀ ਪ੍ਰਗਟਾਓ।